Welcome to season 3 of How to Build a Sustainable Music Career and Collect All Revenue Streams. I'm your host, author, and entrepreneur, Emily White. Yeah! That's a biased woo from season 1 guest, Steph Reed. I'm thrilled to share this season. Is in my longtime home of Brooklyn, New York at Tower Records' new Tower Lab space. This season is in partnership with the New York Mayor's Office of Media and Entertainment's New York Music Month. I'm going to introduce the Mayor's Office of Media and Entertainment Senior Executive Director of Policy and Programs in 1 second, but I just want to say that New York Music Month is an incredible initiative that produces a free and one of the best conferences I've ever been to, along with a slew of free events throughout the month of June. So for more, I'm super excited to introduce the powerhouse that is Shira Gans. Take it away. Did I say your last name wrong?
Nope.
Okay. I'm Midwestern, so I struggle with vowels.
No, that's okay. Thank you, Emily, for that kind introduction. Again, I'm Shira Gans from the New York City Mayor's Office of Media and Entertainment. We're the city agency that supports all the creative sectors in New York City, and I'm the person who's lucky enough to get to create all the partnerships and programs to support the music industry. So this year, we're kicking off New York Music Month in June. This is our second event of the day. We had a downtown music series this morning, so I'm really excited for our live taping series, and I'm excited for everybody to join us for other events. As Emily said, they're free, they're throughout the 5 boroughs, and you can check them out on the website, which is nymusicmonth.nyc, and hopefully we'll see some of you next week at our big conference. All right, thank you to Emily, and thank you to Tower Labs, who's been super generous with their space and a great partner this month, and yeah, I'm excited for everyone. All right.
Amazing. Thank you, Shira. So we're recording this on June 1st, which also means it's Pride Month. Yeah. So I want to deeply thank our partners at the Ally Coalition for supporting us and as well as for the crucial work that they're doing. Founded in 2013 by Jack and Rachel Antonoff, the Ally Coalition provides critical support for organizations dedicated to bettering the lives of LGBTQ youth and raises awareness about the systematic inequalities facing the LGBTQ population. The Ally Coalition is committed to bettering the lives of LGBTQ youth through tours, social media campaigns, and collaborative partnerships. To learn more and how you can get involved, visit theallycoalition.org. And I've got one more. I also want to thank Downtown for their support of this episode. Downtown's mission is to shift the power center of the music industry into the hands of those who create and those that support that creation by giving them the finest and most comprehensive set of tools and services. Downtown is committed to building a more equitable music business. They believe in partnership, advocacy, and helping musicians develop sustainable careers so they don't require clients to give up any of their copyrights, which I am certainly all about. Okay, so let's do this. I want to thank our listeners. You have made this the number one music business podcast in the world, with recent chart debuts in France, Italy, Malaysia, India, and Pakistan, joining the US, Australia, Botswana, Nigeria, Tanzania, and over 30 more countries on 6 continents. This season, we'll be bringing you updated tools to build a sustainable music career forever, paired with conversations with artists and modern industry professionals on their careers. We'll be covering the entire modern music industry in order from recording to release, or creation to execution, while ensuring you're not missing a single revenue stream along the way. So here we go. Today's episode is based on chapter 1 of my Amazon number 1 best-selling book. This podcast is based on. Thank you. And that chapter is called Get Your Art Together. As there's no point in moving on to future episodes until you're making great art. So what does that mean? In my experience, the music that connects with audience for the long term is art that's from your heart, soul, and spirit, not what you think people or the industry or whatever will like. And don't get me wrong, there's brilliant pop songwriters that do just that. But even if you score a flash in the pan, we want your career to last forever or as long as you want it to. And I'm not saying that finding that flow is easy by any means. I totally understand the excitement and enthusiasm to get out there. I meet musicians all of the time who are excited to share their music and say, but I need a new drummer or I need to work on my vocals. You know when your art and music is ready to go instead of feeling forced or rushed. Don't put the cart in front of the horse as the horse is your music. In my experience, artists with lifelong careers are authentically themselves. They're not trying to be something that they are not and aren't making music that they think they're supposed to make. Great art comes from within, and being genuine to your vision and spirit is going to be what connects with people, again, especially for the long term. Anything else isn't going to last for the long haul. There isn't a single artist or creative soul who doesn't know what I mean by this. So get your art together. When you know that you've come up with the greatest possible music that you are ready to put out into the world, then you are ready to go. So just one last thing before I bring on our esteemed guest. I interviewed artist Zoe Keating for the foreword of the book this podcast is based on, and she's one of the only musicians I've ever met that doesn't need to read said book. She's built a sustainable music career for the long term as a solo cellist. But I wanted to share an excerpt of what Zoe had to say on this very topic of getting one's art together. So I asked her, how do you know when you're ripe and ready to record? And Zoe said, you have to have something to say and you have to be able to execute it. What I notice with artists who are starting out is often there's a huge gap in what they want to achieve, what they want to do in the studio, and what they can do right now. I had my little time, a bit like when the Beatles went to Germany and were learning their craft. I had my time in the warehouse where I could perform every weekend to an adoring living room audience, and I could make mistakes and learn how to talk to the audience. I wasn't ready to perform. But at some point, there was a time when I was ready to go out there and do it. You don't want to go out there until you're ready. That said, I do know some people that hash it out as they go along. But there's also that thing when a band wants to record an album and they're not ready. It's just going to be a waste of money and time. I can't speak for other artists, but for me, I had a long time of working in private on something. And then I worked really hard on my EP that I was doing. I did it by myself in a room and worked on it for quite some time until it was ready. I knew I had made something different that I felt proud of and felt like it represented me as a person. That is when I knew it was something. It wasn't something that I thought was cool or that I liked the sound of. It really felt like this is a musical version of myself. That's when I knew I was ready to get out there. So I love that. And if you want to hear that interview, that's on season one. And it's literally a candid conversation because Zoe's a single mom, and I to help her save time, I interviewed her for the foreword of the book instead of having her write it and then asked her if I could release it. So it's a very open, honest conversation between two longtime friends. So now it's time to introduce our incredible guest for today, Namel Tapwaters Norris. I'm just going to share a little info on Tapwaters. Tapwaters, the paraplegic hip hop artist, has become a beacon of hope for those who face adversity, using his music to speak out against social injustices and inspire people to never give up. With an impressive resume that includes speaking at the White House, performing at the United Nations, and collaborating with icons such as Snoop Dogg and Stevie Wonder, Tapwaters has solidified himself as a force to be reckoned with in the music industry. Despite facing a life-altering tragedy as a teenager when he was accidentally shot and left paralyzed, Tapwaters refused to let his setbacks define him. He co-founded the Four Wheel City movement, aimed at creating more opportunities for people with disabilities and combating gun violence amongst youth. Tapwaters' dedication to making a difference in the world has led him to speak on the first ever Recording Academy panel, which is the Grammys, on accessibility called Music, Purpose, and Community. He attended the first disability listening session with Grammy leadership and is a founding member of RAMPT, Recording Artists and Music Professionals with Disabilities, the leading organization for accessibility and disability inclusion in the music industry. And just really quick on RAMPT, RAMP's mission is to amplify disability culture, promote equitable inclusion, and advocate for accessibility in the music industry. Ramped connects the music, entertainment, and event industries to a fast-growing global network of established music professionals with disabilities. Founded in May of 2021 by award-winning recording artist and advocate Lachi, who was also on last season of the podcast, and that was an incredible interview, Ramped came about after a public talk between the Recording Academy and several disabled artists revealed that there is a serious lack of visibility, access, and representation for professional disabled artists. In April 2022, Ramped helped make the 64th Grammys accessible, helping push for a visible ramp to the stage, ASL, and more at the ceremony. So let's welcome Tap Waters. Yeah. Hey, Namel.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing really, really good.
Thanks. Awesome.
Happy to be here.
We're so happy to see you. So you're from New York, right?
Yeah, Bronx, New York, home of hip hop.
Love it.
Yep.
Incredible. It's also the 50th anniversary of hip hop.
Big up to hip hop.
That's right. So we're very excited about that. So what were you like and what were you into as a kid and teenager?
As a kid and teenager, that's like two different things. When I was a kid, I was just a curious kid, I guess. Grew up in the Bronx. My mom's two sisters, stepdad, and just trying to find my way as like trying to be more into. I played basketball. I was in a band. I went to a performing arts school called St. Augustine's. I used to play the bass in the band, and then as I got older, I got into playing basketball and rapping with my friends. Shout out to my crew Nova, Elite Cartel back then. And we just was getting kids growing up in the Bronx, getting that going with music and then getting involved in the streets as well. You know, sometimes making the wrong turns, but it's all part of growing up. Yeah, that's me.
That's great. Do you still play basketball?
You know, I love it. I watch it. I think when I think about it now, I'll be like, I wish I study the game the way I do now. Back then when I was playing, I probably would have been better. But I don't play as much anymore because I like to dribble and stuff. But shout out to all the basketball players mm-hmm. that's in wheelchairs because they go hard.
Absolutely. Yeah. Love it. So are you open to sharing the life-altering event that happened at age 17?
Sure. Like when I was 17 years old, I wasn't born in a wheelchair. I got into a wheelchair when I was 17 years old. My cousin was actually playing around with a gun, and the gun went off and struck me right here in my lower neck and left me paralyzed from like the chest down. That was January 16th in 1999. And I had, when that happened to me, it was crazy because, you know, nobody tells you what comes along with being in a wheelchair. Even if you see somebody in a wheelchair, like everybody's story is not the same, and everything you go through is not the same. So that really was like, really flipped my life upside down. I had to figure out like the whole different process to living. And I thought my life was over until getting back into music and going back out in the world, going back to school, graduating from college and stuff. I had to learn to adapt and pivot in life and find new ways to live. But thanks to hip hop, I always give credit to like hip hop for keeping me going within what I was going through because it gave me a voice like for myself and other people I knew that was going through the same stuff. And that's how I ended up here pretty much, I think.
Wow. So we're so grateful that you're here, that you survived. But, you know, when you're 17, 18 years old, what was the response, you know, socially from your peers at that time?
That's an interesting question because it was a half and half thing. I grew up with friends who were very down to earth and playful jokes, you know. So on one hand, there was a lot of that which bothered me sometimes. But then, you know, I had friends that stuck by me. You know, shout out to my guy P, Monty, everybody. I had a lot of time to like reflect before So when this happened, I had to go to a rehabilitation hospital for 6 months, Burke Rehab, in which I actually got a chance to meet Superman when Christopher Reeves, when he got injured. Mm. That was a crazy time, but I was alone. Like, I didn't see a lot of my friends at the time. So when I went home back to the Bronx, it was like a reintroduction of myself.
Yeah.
So I didn't really like go through the process of like being injured around them. So when I went back home, you know, I think that's when I changed my name to Tap Waters. And a lot of them was there, but at the same time, they didn't really understand what I was going through being young themselves. So it led me to find my voice. Like, it used to be things I wanted to say to them, but I didn't want to, like, be angry. So I started to, like, write songs. I wrote this song called In My Shoes. And it's like, if you think you could be me, go ahead, roll in my shoes. Push yourself around every time that you move. Run out of money from paying your dues. And then try acting like you got something to prove. Everything to gain, nothing to lose. Get shot by your cousin in your own room. And then have a doctor tell you that you're never going to walk. And the messed up part about it wasn't your fault. Then the hospital, the rehabilitation, 6 months of hard work and total concentration, the meditation on top of medication, to see yourself walk, just use your imagination. Then people treat you like you're sitting down for fun, like you don't want to walk or you wouldn't love to run. But then when they say they wouldn't trade places with you, ask them how come. And then, of course, like, they want to know about the wheelchair life. They want to know how a brother make it. If you think that you could take it, I'm going to put you in my shoes. Let's see if you could tie your laces. And that I wrote that as a reaction to like my friends.
Give it up.
Yeah. That was like a reaction to my friends and things they used to say that used to get to me when I being around them, not knowing. So it was like a double-edged sword. But if it gave me cause to my music, though.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what inspired the name Tap Waters? Because I mean, maybe this is too literal, but we are so fortunate in New York City to have arguably the best tap water in America.
Yeah, I am the best tap water.
Not anything to take for granted. That's for sure.
Yeah, I actually, I don't know. I kind of remember it as like sitting in the sun one day and thinking, like, when I go home, I think I was leaning back in the wheelchair, and I was like, when I go home, I want to have like a different identity. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about how I rap prior to my injury and how I used to like always like connect and say like my flow is like water. So I wanted something that dealt with water. But then I was like, but I don't want to be like just water. I want to be edgy with it. So I'm like, oh, tap water, because tap water is from like, you know, the street, the streams. Mm-hmm. And then on the same time, like, the word tap means like to tap into things and be like, so tap into the flows, any beat. Like, it's like what Bruce Lee said, like, put water into a cup, comes the cup, you know, be water. I got a song about that too, like the name, explaining the name. I could check that out on a quarantine mixtape. The song Be Water, it's like got Bruce Lee in it, and it's like it's just explaining the whole name.
And water is life. Yeah. So
he has a lot of metaphors to it. It's like a lot of reasons. Yeah.
Beautiful. How did you meet Ricardo Velasquez?
Me and Rick, we met a few months into my injury through the grace of my mom, who's not alive, living in a physical form anymore. She seen Rick one day outside, because he lived in the next building from me, and she seen him outside, like, I think he was getting pizza or something for his son, and then she was like, yo, my son just got into a wheelchair. He don't know anybody. Would you want to be his friend? Just randomly, you know, being a mom, I guess, she thought I needed a friend. And he gave her his number. And so I called him. I'm like, yo, I don't know. I just asked him a couple of questions, but he invited me to his house. And little do I know, he was making, like, he just brought this beat machine called the MPC 3000. And he was working on a beat. He just was starting to make beats on it. And I was just starting to write raps again because I didn't think I could rap anymore as far as, like, just being in a wheelchair, my voice control. I didn't really have the cadence. And I'm just thinking, like, I don't know if I can do this or if it's a place for me. Mm-hmm. And so I started working with Rick. And, like, the first day I went to his house, he gave me, like, two beats. And I went home and I started writing again. Then I went back to his house and, you know, he didn't even have a lot of equipment. He had, like, a CD player son, and we just started making songs on that together, and that's how we became friends, and that's how we met. And then, like, over time, as I started getting more stronger with my raps and stuff, and he got better with the beats. We just started to make a connection with our music, and we wanted to like identify ourselves, and that's how we came up with the name like Four Wheels, because like to identify the wheelchair, but it was like Four Wheel Records at first, because we didn't see nobody like giving people in wheelchairs opportunities in the music industry, and we even had people around us that was like kind of hesitating to work with us, so we just wanted to do our own thing, so we called it the Four Wheel Records. And then later on, like making these songs about different things and wanting to help people who was in the situation find their voice, we came up with the name. Well, the idea of Four Wheel City is an idea first. It's like to help people to inspire, educate, advocate, entertain. Hold up, but I can't talk about Four Wheel City without doing like this is like our shout out thing. So when I say four, y'all say wheels. Four
wheels.
Four
wheels.
When I say four wheel, y'all say city. Four wheels.
City.
Four wheels.
City.
Yeah, because Four Wheel City is like it deserves that introduction. When I started to do this, I'm like, oh, snap. It felt weird without that energy to explain what this means. It means inspire, educate, advocate, entertain. That's why you see the fours up. And we really started that to like help people. Find like information, be inspired, not to give up, speak to kids about staying in school, but also show people that just because you have a disability, you don't, your life is not over, like for people that don't believe in people in wheelchairs. Mm-hmm. So we started Four Wheel City, and the name actually was from I was doing a freestyle from Cameron and Jay-Z song, but that song they had, Welcome to New York City, and then we said Four Wheel Records. I was just like, Four Wheel City? And I was like, oh, like, we was like, that's what it got to be called, because that's like the whole summary of like the concept of Four Wheel City. And that's how we came up with the name. So shout out to Jay-Z and Cameron for making that song, because we wouldn't even have the name probably.
Well, we should make sure they know that.
Yeah, so tell them.
I will.
In New York, yeah.
Absolutely.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
And you guys founded Four Wheel Records within months of meeting?
Yeah, I say within like the first year or two, because okay. We wanted to like, well, far as me, I'm not going to like do music and waste my time if it's not like in a package some kind of way. So I didn't see no way forward to like make my music, because we wasn't like, Four Wheel City turned into Rick and I like moving around and doing stuff together. But when it first started, it was like me, I'm just an artist and he's just a producer. Mm-hmm. And we just was like that. But for me, it's like, if I'm going to be doing this music and stuff, I want it to be in a package some kind of way. So I was like, Def Jam is not coming to see me, like, mm-hmm. you know, Universal, they're not coming to see me. So let's just start our own thing. And it was at a time where a lot of independent record companies were like starting to do their thing more. So it felt like the right thing to do, like Cash Money, you know, No Limit, Rockefeller, all them, like there was so many different crews and record companies coming out. So we wanted to start our own too.
Love it. From there, you launched Four Wheel City. What is Four Wheel City and what inspired you to create it?
Well, all that stuff I just said, plus just, I think Four Wheel City is like bigger than me. I always say that, and bigger than Rick. I think it's something that's from like God. I think it's like the purpose of why I'm still here, and like why these things happen. Like this, like why I'm getting to tell this story. That's what I really feel about it. I feel like it's bigger than me. It's like a purpose. Like I feel like when I got into the wheelchair, I felt like early on, I just felt like there was like a gap. Mm-hmm. Between like people who was in a situation and people who was walking or able bodied, so to speak, that didn't understand. And as I was getting to understand, I was like, I want to translate it and be like the translator in the middle of like people who don't get it.
Mm-hmm. And it's a nonprofit, right?
Yeah.
So So tell us about the work that you all do.
Yeah, we've been doing like a lot of work within schools to like work with youth, at-risk youth, like keeping them in tune to what like the dangers of going down the wrong path, peer mediation. So that's one thing we do. We go to like hospitals because our whole thing really started organically through Mount Sinai Hospital, mm-hmm. working with patients as well, speaking to them about, you know, keep going, not giving up. So that's some of the stuff we do as well. So those two things are like our two like main pillars of what we do. And then like we push for a lot of inclusion and accessibility mm-hmm. through the city, you know, trying to get more access to ramps and stores, stages, clubs, all that stuff. And that's what we've been doing.
How can folks get involved, donate?
Oh, you just hit us up, fourwheelcity.com, fourwheelcity@gmail, Cash App, fourwheelcity, you know, anything. We on social media. We need more followers. Hit us up on social, fourwheelcity. We ain't hard to find. Yeah.
Definitely not hard to find. And you guys are just doing incredible, crucial work. So as I mentioned, this month is the 50th anniversary of hip hop.
Yep.
What does hip hop mean to you? What does music mean to you?
Ooh. Music and hip hop. So I'm wearing my hip hop shirt with everybody on it right here today. That's what it means to me. It's like I wear it. You know, it's like everything because it's a badge of honor. I feel like it's a culture. But for me, it's something special that I take with me everywhere I go because I get what it has done for me, but I get like how it's misunderstood as well. And I feel like it's something that I feel in the heart. So it's something I can do naturally. And hip hop is I think it's changing the world. You know, look what places it's got me. And people see it. I think it's a lot of negative. Like, people be like, this rapper. Sometimes it bothers me the way they use the word rapper now. I feel like they try to put, like, a negative connotation mm-hmm. on it sometimes. Like, when things happen, when I feel like when you, like, you hear the word poet or something, it sounds, people make it more, like, elegant, you know. And I feel like rappers are so intelligent. And the way we kind of get portrayed is not in the right way sometimes. But hip-hop has always been, like, the voice of the people mm-hmm. where it comes from. And that's what I am. I'm a voice of the people. And I just feel like hip-hop saves lives, changes lives. And I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for hip-hop.
Beautiful. Yeah. Wow. So why and how did you co-found Ramped? Sorry. One follow-up to the last question. Who's on your shirt for our audio-only listeners?
Oh, man. We got Tupac. We got Biggie. We got Outkast on here, Snoop. Oh, we got who's this up here? We got Public Enemy.
I can see Ice Cube.
Run DMC. Ice Cube. I got a little everybody on here. I see some of the people on here. I seen like that Biggie picture over there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's music is a beautiful thing. It's like I feel like it's a fraternity. Mm-hmm. Like music, you know, we all have like a connection. In a sense, especially when you get like to have a voice in it, and we all kind of connect that way. So that, and I feel like connected to like a lot of artists that way.
It's true. And you referenced this amazing wall at Tower Labs for our audio only folks. It's a whole bunch of like magazine photos and cutouts of artists. And this is literally what my bedroom wall looked like in high school, except it may or may not have been only pictures of the band Oasis. But total blast from the past here. Mm. So back to my other question. Why and how did you form Ramped?
Okay, Ramped is actually it's like a coalition of some dope artists with quote-unquote disabilities mm-hmm. that came together in 2021, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, it's gone so fast now. So we shout out to Lachi. Mm-hmm. She was like the spearhead of all this, getting us artists together. Me, another artist called Galen, Question. There's a few of us. And we came together to, she got us together to speak to the Grammys originally. Mm-hmm. about being more inclusive. And from that conversation, you know, started a real movement for change of primarily focusing on music industry stuff, for people to be able to get more jobs, people to be more visible, more ramps on these like award shows, ASL stuff. And we just been doing that like collectively as a movement and been working with a lot of different companies, to like Netflix, United Masters, and just trying to have people acknowledge disability culture. Because just like hip hop has a culture, I see like disability as a culture as well, because there is a lot of things happening in that world that people don't understand or get the full spectrum of. Because it's like if you don't know, it's hard to find out about it. But that's the problem, I feel like, because I didn't hear nothing about it until I started. Even when I was in the wheelchair and I started doing music, I didn't hear nothing about the Americans with Disability Act until I actually did a song called The Movement, talking about why a store is not wheelchair accessible. And then we got asked to perform at a ADA anniversary. And that was like the 15th, and it was at City Hall. And I'm like, wow, like I'm performing this. I'm like, did anybody ever rap in City Hall before? I don't know. Like, we rapped in the United Nations and we talked in the Wilds. I'm like, I don't even know rappers ever did stuff like this. But it's disability stuff. But it's still hip hop. So it's like, why is that not being acknowledged in the same way other people do things? Like, sometimes I see it like when we do stuff like with Ramp, like the Grammys, it don't get the same headline or play, but I feel like it's like the same stuff Jay-Z is doing with the NFL type stuff. It's like the same kind of relationship. But and disability culture is not really looked at that way. It don't get that same lens, so people won't see it that way, but that's how I see it. So just to me, that's what Ramp is about. It's like bringing that change from like the bottom, from people who really live it and understand the culture and like things happening from like the parades, the festivals, the stuff like this, how I got here from Ramp. So like a lot of people won't understand that that's possible. They might see somebody in a wheelchair and be like, well, how am I going to market him? You don't need to market me because I already know what I'm doing. Just invest and maybe see like a return on your investment. And like get to understand like the path forward.
Yeah.
And don't like, it's like a new business model like people don't understand. But we've been doing this, so I understand, but it's like a fight to like get the inclusion part.
So what are, you know, these companies you're working with, you know, like Netflix, what are they doing to be more inclusive? And also like, you know, we have entrepreneurs, industry folks in the audience, like, you know, what can we do in big and small ways to become a more inclusive industry?
Yeah, so like, I think what I just touched on, I feel like it's not so much trying to find like a new big thing. It's like support what's already happening. Yeah. It's like, think of if when you hear the story of like rappers, I'm gonna go back to like when you hear the story, you always hear like, oh, they got somebody that gave them $1 million. No matter what they was doing first, you don't really hear something. You hear like somebody gave this person his label there, like this, and that's what we need. We need like that influx of people to support what's already happening, I think. And not look at it like what I'm going to do with that. And like just support it in any way possible. And I think that's like the next evolution of it. As far as Ramp, like we shout out to the Ford Foundation. We just started working with them, got a grant from them.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
It's a huge deal.
Winning a bunch of awards. So that's just like, those are like small steps, but it got to come from like the industries I'm talking about, like the record companies and stuff like that, just like they would do any other artist who's doing things like this.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's a great segue to my next question. What is Ramped Records?
So Ramped Records is our own platform for what I'm talking about that we're starting and I'm heading up. It started as a conversation through Steve Stout, United Masters company. And we're working with them like behind the scenes to get more artists on like their platform and being able to release music with the same kind of tools behind the scenes to like get placements and things like that. And also we're looking to support artists who not getting the looks that I'm talking about. So we can be like that support. And if that's something we like, we need funding for now too, to support other artists. So that's what's behind Ramp Records right now. It's just starting, but I feel like it's everything that Ramp has been kind of building so far, like to actually be the place that we're trying to get other people to help us with, like to actually build the place for ourselves as well.
Exactly. And that's such a perfect example for all of us. It's like, if the traditional industry doesn't come to you, and I have to say it rarely does, you know, you are the industry, right? So like, if you have access to a laptop or smartphone, and we're going to get into all of this, like you can record, you know, like that. There's two major things that completely revolutionized the music industry to bring us where we are now. One is access to recording. So in the pre-digital era, you would have to sign your rights away to be able to afford a recording studio, unless you are a one percenter. And now it's like, we're recording this right now. Like Namel, not that you would want me on a song, but like we could record a song right now, right? Mm-hmm. And do that pretty seamlessly. And we're going to talk more about that in episode 4, how to record with or without a budget. But the other thing that cracked the modern music industry wide open is the access to distribution, right? So we could record a song and we could have it out immediately, right? Like we could put it up on Bandcamp. We can, you know, distribute to streaming platforms. So that's the thing. It's like, yes, there is a traditional industry. And if that's something you're interested in, that's actually the last episode, because we're teaching you how to build yourself up if you want a career, if you want a team, or if you have a team. Because, you know, when I was interviewing Lachi in the last season, and if you don't know Lachi, besides just being like a total force of nature and amazing person, like I've known her probably 15 years or so, and she works hard. I mean, she has been busting her butt in the New York music scene for so long, and it was amazing to go through her career and all this success she's having, but her manager passed away of COVID, right? So like team members can come and go. I usually think about like, well, they move on to another career or another company or something, but it's like, you know, there's also a tragedy like that that can happen. So if you're just relying on, and Lachi is a great example of like a hybrid of the traditional industry. And like I said, she's just worked so hard over the years. That's what we're talking about. So that's what you're doing. With Ramped Records, in my opinion. Have you signed artists? What are you looking for? How's that process going?
It's going, we just started our, like, putting out our call for music for artists that's who, because so Ramp as an organization has mm-hmm. members.
Yep.
So we just put out our first call for, like, music submissions and stuff to, like, our people that's with the organization, to see what we get back. And we're looking to release a new song the end of this month, and in July through United Masters. So that's where we at right now. We taking our time with it in terms of like growing the process, because mm-hmm. like we said, we still need the support in terms of whether it's within ourselves. To like really, we want to be competitive. You know, we don't want to just be doing this because it's like just something nice to do.
Right.
We want to do it like on a very high level, like any other. Mm-hmm. That's what we're about. Like we want to do it like on a very high level, and that's what we're like aiming for.
And are you able to share the artist who has the track coming out?
Well, I'm working on one right now. Okay. Actually, it's going to be produced with Hit-Boy, Shining and Rolling. Mm-hmm. Through the United Masters platform, their beat exchange program that I went through. Lachi is actually coming out with a song in remembrance of Judy Heumann,
mm-hmm.
passed away, who was like a big deal in like the disability advocacy world, recently passed away. So those are like two things coming up. And then we have some other artists who are going to be doing some stuff. But those like two of the next big things we got coming out. And we did last December, we did our first launch tour of a couple of singles featuring a blind rapper as well named Question 8 from the ATL, Call on God, and I featured Yeah, so we did that, and Lachie and him did a song as well in December for Disability International Day of Persons with Disability, and like they helped us launch it too through United Masters.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So how were the Grammys?
Oh, the Grammys. Grammys was awesome, especially this year because it was such a dope show itself. Mm-hmm. Like just to see all those crazy great artists in one place at one time.
Yeah.
I felt like it was less of a war show, more of a celebration mm-hmm. this year because of the 50 years of hip hop, Beyonce breaking the record, DJ Khaled performance. Stevie Wonder is one of my heroes. Like he got me back into music. I'm featured in a docuseries that's on Apple with him. I'm called Dare. And I was like, Stevie Wonder's here. Like I wasn't even thinking about that, but all that under one roof was like crazy. And then I actually was taking like footage behind the scenes doing stuff and turned it into a video for a song I put out in February. Never Take Me Out the Game. So it was like a lot going on, but it was great. And a shout out to the Grammys for mm-hmm. bringing Ramp on board to do the ASL and inclusion measures behind the board, behind the scenes and stuff. That was a big deal. And it's been good to like have the Grammys as an issue, like conversation and like support, because I feel like they like the standard of inclusion for music when it comes to how people, oh, he's a Grammy Award winner, oh, he's Grammy nominated. So, like, to have that support, like, starting out, I feel like it gives, like, an umbrella to, like, so many other people who should be who want to get involved and should get involved, from record companies to artists that all feel like, you know, they won a Grammy, but it's like, then they should want to, like, be inclusive.
That's
like
right.
The Grammys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just incredible. I mean, I've been seeing that work everywhere, you know, like whenever the Grammys is mentioned, like it's Ramped, it's you guys, like you're just everywhere and crushing it.
Yeah.
It's really awesome.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So back to the title of this episode, Get Your Art Together. What does getting your art together mean to you?
Ooh, I mean, I feel like the two things, it's probably more than two things, but I feel like two of the most important things about art is like staying in the moment mm-hmm. and timing, you know? It's like, I think if you overthink it, then you might miss the opportunity. Because music, I feel like music is like very subjective, to each his own. Like mm-hmm. you know, I might like something, they might not like something. That might sound good to them, that might not sound good to them. You know, so it doesn't really have to have a particular thing. But I think it's about having fun with it
mm-hmm.
and being able to leverage it in any way possible. And I think that's when you're creative, if you can do that, and if you're good, then good things should happen.
Yep.
And like put it out there, like perform, you know, perform. I think performing is important.
Mm-hmm.
Being in front of people, even just talking, I think being in front of people and around people with your music is important.
You know, I can't remember the exact word you just said, but it was basically like, oh, being in the moment. That's what you said. That's easier said than done.
Yeah.
Even though that's basically Buddhism, right? Like be here now. How do you find that?
You know, I think you got to be a little crazy, but in a good way. You got to believe in like weird things, that miracles. You got to believe in like
mm-hmm.
and have faith to start the journey, cuz it's not like something you just do. It's like a practice.
Yeah.
And it's like once you can do that, you start to like chase it. It mm-hmm. starts to come like a thing. And that's how I feel. Like one of my friends told me, that was my guy Russ, when we was working on the work we did with Snoop Dogg, he was like, I was getting very anxious about it and stuff. And he told me, stay in the moment, don't wait for it. Mm-hmm. And like that really changed my yeah. perception about like how to do music. Like it's like stay in the moment, don't wait yeah. for it.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, you said it's a practice, not yeah. to keep digging in on this, but this is what this episode's all about. Mm-hmm. And it's something I'm very passionate about. I want to write a book at some point called The Routine about mm-hmm. my routine, which is how mm-hmm. I find my professional flow every day. Mm-hmm. So you said it's a practice. What's part of that practice to get in the moment? And like you said, just nail it instead of wait for it.
I think you gotta be willing to challenge yourself mm-hmm. a little bit, and you gotta be okay with the outcome either way.
Yes.
And you gotta be able to breathe through that. Like that's how it's like an approach to you gotta be okay with the outcome. I used to play a lot of basketball. Mm-hmm. So I shout out to my guy Kobe. Mm-hmm. Kobe kind of raised me through my injury mm-hmm. in a sense, because this happened to me in 99, and they first started winning championships in like 2000. I was a big Laker fan. Yeah.
Is that sacrilegious, being a New Yorker?
I love the Knicks too. I love the Knicks because I'm from here. I love the Lakers because I grew up on the Lakers. Mm, okay. You know, from the 80s, you yeah. know.
And they win, even though the Knicks are better win. Now.
So, you know, my mom's the big Magic Johnson, Pat Riley fan. I was yeah. a big Magic Johnson fan, so he got me into passing. But mm-hmm. a lot of that stuff, as I grew up, and after this happened to me, came back into play because, like, I used to like to pass, and now I feel like I'll take that into, like, a lot of things I do in music and, like, business. I like to, like, help people and assist. Mm-hmm. It's, like, the same thing. But Kobe, when they first started winning championships and when he first was, like, coming to age, I'm like, I didn't know who he was, but he was, like, so, like, bold. Like, I'm going to prove something to you.
Yeah.
And he proved it to me, but at the same time, it's the way he did it. And at the time, early in my injury, I was very timid to do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And I would just say, I would think about Kobe, like, even though he probably was going to miss, he shot, and he just was cool with it. So I used to have to go to school and go into the classroom, and I used to be nervous. And I'd be like, well, what would Kobe do? He still would just don't care what nobody think. And I would just go in the classroom sometime, like, with a little encouragement. And I started to develop. I think you need something to tell yourself sometimes, too, just to be repetitive. And I started to be like, give the ball to Kobe. Mm-hmm. And I was like, when I get nervous, I'd be like, just give the ball to Kobe. Like, shoot your shot. Just go. And I think that helped me a lot. And sometimes you need something to let it go, mm-hmm. you know, and be okay. And in the music, I feel like, depending on your level and how you do it, like me as like a performer, I get nervous, but at the same time, you gotta enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like if you're not enjoying it at the same time, then it's probably not something you should do.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to do something that's making you feel like bad. You know what I mean?
Right.
You should find something that makes you feel good. Even if you're nervous, you still want to feel good about it. Mm-hmm. So even though I'm nervous, it's like an excitement there that makes me yeah. feel like, all right, let's go. You know, if you don't feel like that, then it's probably going to be a little harder.
Yeah. And it shows that you care. And I work with Olympic gold medalists and they talk about channeling those nerves, yeah. right? Like that energy is there for a reason, but what are you doing with it?
Yeah. And then you win or you lose. It's like, then yeah. what do you do after that? That's the thing too. So that's the catch. It's like, if you're cool with losing, but do you go back again?
Yeah.
And if you win, how do you handle winning? You know, do you go back to the same method that got you that win?
Yeah.
Some people don't. Some people change, you know.
Right.
But you got to learn through the process.
Yeah.
It's not one thing. It tastes like you got to fail sometimes, so you got to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So true. And I love what you said about letting go of expectations. Almost every artist I've ever known or worked with isn't, this sounds terrible, but like I understand it, isn't psyched about what they are known for or famous for. We've consulted on a 90s artist for a long time. So if you want to figure it out, you probably can, right? If you go to my website or whatever. But they're an incredible band, and their biggest hit, I'm totally outing it, is a Neil Diamond cover. And you know, it just landed a Louis Vuitton sync, You know, and it's still, and they, you know, they get that money on the recording side. We'll get a little bit more into that in, into episode three, into, you know, the different rights in music. But like, I know it can be frustrating for them because they are brilliant songwriters, but it's also like, you have arguably the most famous sync ever. It's in Pulp Fiction and like Uma Thurman's interacting with the music and it's amazing. So I've, and I have like a million examples of that. So you're so right. It, to me, not that they don't, but it's like, you got to appreciate what you get. You know, like I just was, I don't know if judge is the right word, but I'm always on the panel for at NYU at the Clive Davis Institute for their seniors who are mostly artists who present on their music. And one of them was showing her stats that her demo was kind of middle age. And she's like, well, I really want a younger audience. And I was like, well, the middle aged people have money. So, you know, who cares, right? But anyway, not really a question, but I just really appreciated what you said about, you know, letting go of expectations.
Yeah, it's something that it's hard to do.
Yeah.
Because some like we get it built up from when we kids, and it's hard to like try to see things for what they actually are sometimes.
Yep.
And that's what I try to do. I try not, and then for me, I feel like it's a lot of what I've been through in life too. Mm-hmm. It's like when you grow up with an expectation to walk the rest of your life, or your cousin who's your best friend, like, gonna be there the rest of your life, and then that doesn't happen, and your mom is like, you start to see, like, hold up, like, let me pause for the cause for a second, because all this stuff is, like, chill, like, let me be a little more patient and stay, because tomorrow is tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, today is today.
Yeah, and all we have is now.
Yeah.
All we have is today.
Yeah.
So, along those same lines, when do you know that you're ripe and ready to record?
Whenever I record, like, I don't know. I feel like I'm always recording.
Yeah.
Even if I'm not recording. Mm-hmm. Like, I could be in a club and hear a beat, and I'll start rapping my own song. I might not remember it, but I'm always, like, in the process of doing music in my head. Mm-hmm. And then when it's something that, like, I feel like that'll be, I feel like two things. Like, it's either in a moment you're just inspired by something, mm-hmm. or you have an idea,
yeah.
and, like, the means to do it. And those two things are probably the same, but some people just, I think it goes, like, music should be some kind of fun to it, mm-hmm. but in context, if you have a message, it should be done in a way that feels good. So,
yeah.
Like if you're going to it like it's a project and you have to do it, then you should like, I guess, try to be almost like as good as you can be if you're writing a paper, you know, mm-hmm. like be that precise. But I think on the other hand, you should stay inspired and do things in a moment as much as you can.
Yes.
And have fun with it. I think it should be very like loose. Music should be loose and fun.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. Like even if you're doing it like with a big idea, like the movement, the mm-hmm. song that me and Rick worked on, talking about stores not being wheelchair accessible. And I remember, I always think back to that song because I remember when I heard that beat and I was in the studio with Rick and it was like, it had like this boom, boom. And I'm hearing it and I'm like, yo, that's a high beat, man. And I'm like, I think that beat would like rock in the club. And I was like, but I got this issue on my mind mm-hmm. about not being able to get into the store.
Yeah.
And I'm like, let me see if I can match that to this beat. And then Rick, we recorded the song. So in that moment, I wasn't like, I don't know if I didn't go to his house and be like, oh, I'm going there to make this song about this. He played the beat. Then I had the idea mm-hmm. and we recorded it. So sometimes you're right, you might not even know it mm-hmm. until you're in the element. You know, it's like sometimes you got to pick. It's like fruit, if it's talking about ripe, you got to like pick. You know, we talk artists, we talk a metaphor. So you're talking about like pick and ripe. It's like sometimes you got to go picking.
Yeah.
You know, and then it'll come to you if it's meant to be. You know, it'll just come to you. You don't got to force it.
What a great answer. You're ripe and ready to record when you go picking. Exactly. Yeah. When the fruit's ready. So what advice do you have, you know, for your Ramped Records artists on getting their art together or any artists?
I think just make the magic, because I feel like I'm not the guru of it all. Mm-hmm. I look at music like I said, it's very organic. It's its mm-hmm. own. What I love about music is that it's its own thing.
Yeah.
There's no color to it. Mm-hmm. There's no right or wrong to it. There's no nothing. Nobody can. That's why music has always been my escape.
Yeah.
Because I always felt like it don't matter what you think.
Yeah.
That's what I like about music. It doesn't matter what nobody thinks. Mm-hmm. It's like its own thing. That's what art is. It's like its own thing. So I feel like if you're an artist and especially if you want ramp and anything, like find your voice and don't be afraid to speak on things from your heart, things you go through, you know. And the challenge is if you're an artist, it's like to paint that picture, you know. Mm-hmm. And take accept the challenge to paint the picture, whether it's just music to have fun yep. or it's music that has a message. Like, you know, just take the challenge to, like, paint the picture.
Yep. So true. So last question before we open it up to the audience. What are you up to now?
Sitting here at Tower Records, just chilling, talking in the moment.
Beautiful.
Other than that, so on June 16th, we're doing a New York Music Month event through Forward City. That's called Who Shot Ya? Hip Hop Saved Us. And we're going to be talking with a couple of hip hop artists who are who have disabilities, mostly in wheelchairs due to gun violence, and like how hip hop has kept them going. Working on that. That's June 16th, which is Tupac's birthday. Mm-hmm. And doing that. And we're also doing, like I said, the song with Hit-Boy be out at the end of June or first week of July. Working on Ramp Records and on the Disability Pride Festival is coming up too. Working on a performance there to celebrate hip-hop. And I think, I'm not sure, October, we're working on a conference, so like a small, I don't know how big it's going to be yet, but how many days. But we're working on a hip-hop conference mm-hmm. to like celebrate artists and disabilities who's been here. I think it's called We Been Here. Mm-hmm. Shout out to the Soul Touch of Keith, Crip Hop. We're working with them. They just won an Emmy for a song mm-hmm. they did with the, I forgot the name of the documentary about the Paralympics, I think, mm-hmm. or the Olympics. Forgot, but they just won an Emmy. So we're working on a conference to talk about how disability has been here and through the hip hop industry since it's been around. We're going to tell a lot of different stories and speak on it and try to get some clarity about hip hop and disability.
Wow. I love it. I also want to add, you know, when you were talking about how you can make whatever you want, you know, and that's something that you love about music. That's also not something to take for granted. So, like, you know, I know we're very focused on now, but in the pre-digital era, when you would have to sign your rights away to record and distribute, you would actually have to get approval from the record company to release the music. So now it's like you can release like a 4-hour album or a 2-second song or a space opera or whatever you want to do. Yeah, the sky is really the limit. And, you know, the last thing I just want to say, you know, before we open it up to Q&A about getting your art together is, you know, we had Justin Vernon from Bon Iver on season 1. And, you know, he was talking about how he again, I'm not saying it's easy to find your flow, but he tried so hard for years. He was like, I went to Barnes & Noble and bought the like how to book a tour book and trying. And it wasn't until his life fell apart, you know, like his band broke up, his girlfriend broke up with him. And he just went up to his dad's cabin in northern Wisconsin and basically just like emotionally like gave up. And then the album For Emma flowed out of him, right? Mm-hmm. So again, trust me, I'm not saying it's easy as a musician, as a creative professional, as an athlete, whatever, to find that flow, find that zone. But that's what it's all about, right? Like there's no point of, you know, moving on to the next episode on, you know, pre-recording marketing foundation until, you know, like I said, in my opinion, you're making art that's true to your soul, you know, your heart, your spirit, because that's what's going to connect with folks for the long term. So any questions for Tap Waters? Yeah, we got one back there. We're going to bring a mic back to you. Thank you, Michael, with the mic. And introduce yourself. Let us know who you are.
What's going on? My name is Saif Boogie.
What's up?
How you doing? Hey. I'm an independent hip-hop artist as well, too, so blessings.
Spread love. It's the Brooklyn way.
Biggie. So I wanted to ask, when you have, you know, because all artists, they go through that writer's block moment. So when you have that moment, what do you do to get yourself out of that?
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. The only time I really had writer's block is when I first got injured.
Okay.
And because I didn't know what I was going to say. I didn't know how to say it. I didn't know where I was going, up, down, right, or left. But I think what's important is to try to be able to, it's too, I guess if you find a balance with being okay with it,
right,
and, you know, then living, mm-hmm. and have fun with the practice of, it's one thing to write, but it's one thing to do.
I get what you're saying.
Still do it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Even if it's like not even night. I mean, like the greatest thing. But just have fun. Like I said, I rap. I beat songs come on movies. I start making up songs. I don't know. But I don't write it. Mm-hmm. It's not the best song to me. Mm-hmm. But it's like I just have fun with just being like doing the creative part, just rapping, even if it's just like off the top of my head.
Right.
And don't take it so serious in that moment.
Gotcha.
Like just like be in the do moment more than the writing moment. That's what I try to do. Because I don't write as much as I should, mm-hmm. but I still try to do it. Even if I'm not recording, it's still like do it.
Right, because it's like second nature to you.
Yeah, yeah, so just do it.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Even if you freestyle, even if you come up with something, even if it's whack.
Right, right.
Still do it. And then something to come to you, and then you, oh, I like that. Let me write that down.
Take that bar.
Yeah, and then you don't got to be like the, and then one day you be sitting in the studio with like Rick, and then the beat come on, you be like, oh, remember that line I said? Then it come right back to you.
Okay. All right. Thank you, man. I appreciate that, man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yeah. Come on up.
Hello. Sorry. Thank you so much for being here and for taking the time to talk to us. And thank you for hosting this. My name is Yancy Abril. I'm an artist from New York. And I guess I'm in a place where I'm just learning, observing everything, and taking in everything that I can to be able to make sure my career is what I want it to be. So I guess my question is, what's a piece of advice that you might have for me that you've learned along the way of, I guess, negotiating things or making sure that you're organized with releases and all of those things? What's kind of like a piece of advice you would have for someone like me?
Yeah, I'm still working on that too. But I think what's important is to have a long view in terms of even if you might not get it right this time, you're going to get it right the next time. Mm-hmm. Like have a long view of it. Like this is not your last song. It's not your first song. Like, you're going to keep doing it. And I think having a long view keeps you going and, like, making it better every time. And I think that's important to, like, be, have a long vision of, like, where you're trying to go with your music. Because even the biggest artists, they might put out something and it's not what they thought it was going to be. You know, I don't think it matters, like, on a level. It's just about, like, the execution, of course. But I think you got to, because you could do everything you think you're doing is right, and it might not meet your expectation when you do it, right? So it's like having that thought that you're going to do it again and taking a long view so you'll be okay with the process. And that's what I try to do and, like, just make it better every time. And then as you're learning, it should get better every time. So you get to a point where it's like, all right, you know what's happening. You're ahead of the schedule. You know, every time, just keep working at it.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh, how so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit, or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and I just want to echo that. I'm so, you know, honored that Warped Tour founder Kevin Lyman is a, you know, mentor and dear friend of mine. And he's always saying to me, long game, Emily, long game. And that's exactly what you're saying. You know, just keep that long game in mind. Anyone else? And if not, you know, I would also love to hear from the audience. What does getting your art together mean to you? How do you find that flow? Yeah. Come back on up.
Well, for me, usually when I'll try to get into the flow state of creating, mm-hmm. I search for inspiration. So I go to like artists that inspire me, like a Michael Jackson, like a Biggie. Just getting in that flow, or I even listen to like my older songs and things like that, and just like try to get tapped into the space where I want to, okay, let me elevate, or like what haven't I tapped into before, into a topic I haven't tapped to before. But my main thing is trying to find that creative vibe to tap into and just sit in there and just let it go. So that's for me.
Is there something that you literally do physically or mentally to try to get to that headspace?
I watch Michael Jackson performances specifically. That's one of the things I do. So yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Anyone else? What does getting your art together mean to you? Yeah. And please introduce yourself.
My name's Colin Dworsky. I'm a music producer. I work at a studio in Manhattan. Great. And I get a lot of different artists in my space. And one of the main things is creativity is a habit. Yeah. And creating a habit of play. It's like, it's not about judging the ideas. It's letting the ideas just flow through you. Mm-hmm. It's like we can tap into ideas. It's just letting ourselves grab and then just place and refine. The process comes together in the refinement. Yeah. Not in like, don't give yourself too much of a barrier of entry in the beginning. Allow yourself to grab and then refine. And I think that's really important to like get that mentality there for people who are kind of struggling with the writer's block or their creative process.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. That's, love it.
That's,
go ahead.
Like, sometimes when you're making music, the funnest, like one of the funnest parts to me is like hearing that idea come through the speaker.
Yeah.
Over the beat, like to see like, oh, that's what it is. That's what I mean, because that's why I say it's its own thing, because it's not what you think in your head. It's not what somebody think is going to be. It's once it comes through the speaker, how it sounds is its own thing. Whether you thought you did it good, whether you thought the beat was good, it's going to, when it comes through the speaker, it's its own thing. And it's like, when you hear it, it's like, oh, okay, that's how that sound. Oh, that, I didn't think it was going to sound like that. Wow, that sound a lot better than I thought it was going to sound. And then, like you said, then that refinement process kind of takes on a life of its own. And then it becomes something bigger than you ever expected, because you gave it a chance to like do its own thing. And because music is for hearing, it's not for thinking.
Yeah.
Or it's not for like talking. It's like to take in and like filter it in a certain way. And then it's gonna tell you what's next thing to do. Whether you're gonna dance, or you're not gonna like it, like the music gonna give you, it's gonna give you the cue.
Yep. That's exactly right. I love it. Anyone else?
I got a question.
Yeah, Jake. Jake running the live stream, making the magic happen at Tower.
Multitasking. I'm curious, how has your recording process changed over the years, and if there's any new emerging technologies that you're excited about?
Oh, it's changed a lot. Well, you know what? I can't say it's changed a lot because, all right, so it has, you know, so weird. It's changed a lot, but it hasn't changed a lot. Because when I first started recording music, when I'm talking about since a kid, it was in somebody's house who had equipment. Mm-hmm. We didn't go to big studios. This is like the 90s when people were still going to big studios. It was like we were doing it in the Bronx. Shout out to Lucky, who was the producer, who was doing it at his house with a four track. Then when I met Rick, We didn't know how to go to no studios. I didn't know how to roll around and find a studio and pay money for that. So we built up everything in rig equipment. But we thought we were, like, doing something that was, like, taboo and, like, behind the curve. But now, that's how everybody's rapping and recording. Sitting in the house at the computer the same way, like, me and Rick was doing it when we first started in 1999. Like, you see everybody, even the biggest, like, I see Jay-Z recording on videos. I see all these artists recording. They sitting in a room with somebody at the thing. Stuff that me and Rick was doing, like, in 99 that we thought was, like, damn, like, we can't go to the studio with everybody, you know, so we got to figure this out. Now we look at everybody's rapping, sitting down with their friend in a room.
Yeah.
So it's changed the technology, but the process is, like, I think it's changed a lot of people, but I feel like that's what we had. So it's like, feel like the industry kind of gravitated towards, like, our work process. So the way I work has been the way I've been working for, like, the last 25 years, based on the fact that we wasn't going to big studios.
Yeah.
But on the technology side of it, it's changed a lot, though, as far as, like, video filming, because that's part of it, too. The way you send beats to people, the MP3 mm-hmm. versus, like, a CD. Like, we had a 4-track. Versus, like, now Rick can record songs outside. Like, he sit outside. We made a song in the airport. Like, it's, you know, so, the technology and the transportation of music now is, like, way beyond what it was back then, though.
Do you create your own beats?
I do sometimes, but I'm more like, I let Rick do that when I work with Rick, and I'll get beats from other producers. I like to work with producers because I like to hear the beat and be inspired rather than I'm getting into my guitar. I got like a few songs I made on a guitar. I'm trying to get back in my roots when I was a kid with that. But like when it comes to beats, I like to let producers do their thing and then I do my thing. I like that connection.
Absolutely. And we'll talk a little bit more about this in the legal episode, but I don't know if you agree, but I really like beat stars as far as getting beats, because I hear a lot of random things from students and artists that are like, I rented beats from someone on YouTube. I'm like, I don't know what that means. So we'll get into that more in the legal episode. But we had Carl Folks, who's an amazing attorney, on the previous season, also co-signing on BeatStars. So you can get your legal beats at BeatStars. Awesome. Any other questions?
I have a question.
Yeah. Michael.
So one thing I always like to ask artists, especially when you're talking to up-and-coming ones, is if you were only to give only one piece of advice, if you can only sum up into one piece of advice that you can give to an up-and-coming artist, what would that one piece of advice be?
Ooh, probably not the advice I'm going to give right now, because when I really think about it, I'm going to be like, I should have said that. But I think being an artist is a responsibility that you have to yourself, right? So if you're going to call yourself an artist, make sure, like, you create from a pure place, you know? And like I said earlier, I'm going to echo my homie Russ, like, live in the moment, don't wait for it. Because I know a lot of artists, a lot of rappers who I feel are better than me, mm-hmm. that I think have been better than me, but I feel like they might have overthink things or not show up. So don't overthink things and show up, you know?
Yeah.
And stay in the moment and create.
I totally agree, and I was going to mention that when we had a question from a producer. I mean, I think, like, again, whether it's music or sports or whatever, overthinking can crush the flow. Again, easier said than done, but especially when it comes to recording, you know? It's just like, is it ever done? How do you know when it's done? And I've worked with, you know, some very big artists where it's not their first rodeo, and they're just, you know, constantly overthinking, like, that last 10%. So, yeah. Whatever you need to do to find your flow, get a full night's sleep, hydrate with our friends at Liquid Death, go on a walk, hang out with a pet, you know?
Yeah, it's a process because you gotta have courage too. You gotta be brave when you're an artist. If you're not up for like that that like rejection or that challenge.
Yeah.
If you're not up for it, then you shouldn't be an artist because that comes with it. You gotta you gotta feel like sometimes you wanna feel like nobody's gonna get this.
Yeah.
That's how I like to feel, like nobody's gonna get this. And then I like to like be like, okay, let me see if they get it.
Well, that's the thing. Like all the great artists that we've talked about, you know, that we admire, like nobody sounded like them before.
Yeah.
You know?
I like to feel like this idea is like nobody's gonna get this.
Yeah.
So I could like let me prove that I can make somebody understand this through this music festival.
Right. So instead of waiting for some magical person that, you know, honestly, like I feel ridiculous saying this, but like when, and we'll talk more about this in distribution, but when folks buy this book directly, I can see that their URL, their email address. And it's like, there's managers from some of the biggest management companies in the world, like buying this book. And my point is like, they're trying to figure this stuff out too. Right. So, you know, I totally agree with you. It's like, be yourself, make something authentic, make something different, because that's actually what stands out.
And you have to believe in it too, because I remember, so one thing I didn't mention earlier about my friends and everything, when I used to rap when I was younger, I used to be like one of the most gruesomest street, like say the craziest stuff rapper you would find, just finding my voice. That was my voice. I want to say like the most outlandish thing. When I first started rapping, it was like, imagine you can do anything you want and write. I'm like, what are you talking about? That's my cousins and them told me. But so I used to write like crazy stuff. And then when I started to change my style and start talking about being in the wheelchair, a lot of my friends didn't get it. And they started like not to listen to my music as much. And it kind of hurt my feelings a little bit, but I knew that I didn't want to be like everybody else.
Yeah.
I knew that. I knew I wanted to like tell this story.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I was like, I'm gonna stick to this story about being in a wheelchair and these things I'm going through, because I'm gonna do other type of music. I'm gonna talk about other things, but I was like, I nobody's never done this before.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I can do it. So I'm gonna try it. I think nobody rapped about stuff they go through in a wheelchair. You know what? That's what I'm gonna do.
Yeah.
And that's what I started doing. I was like, I'm going to start rapping. Because the people who see it now think that's a natural thing. It wasn't a natural thing for me.
Mm.
It was like a decision.
Yeah.
It was like a real decision. I was very clear about, like, I'm going to start writing about this stuff, because instead of being mad, instead of complaining, I'm going to take this challenge. But at the same time, I'm going to do it like in a way that a rapper would do it, like a Biggie told his story or a Tupac told a story. I even remixed Dear Mama. And shout out to Tupac. I was just watching the Dear Mama series the other day, and we're doing the Who Shot You on his birthday. But like Tupac, and he did Dear Mama. I'm watching it. I'm like, Tupac was doing that too, because like, who writes a song about their mother the way he did, unless you really feel like who writes a song about Brenda having a baby? Like, unless you feel like I'm going to like shock the world, you know?
Yeah.
And that's my mindset. Like, I want to shock the world with my music. That's how I feel. So I take this inspiration from like artists like that.
Well, you're definitely doing that.
Yeah.
Well, any final thoughts?
I think my thoughts is like, but I could talk all day. I could rap all day. I think about this stuff, so it's more so like a release. But at the end of the day, music is therapy for me.
Yeah,
this is therapy for me, not because I'm like bitter or anything. It's just because I have a calling, and I just fall into it. So that's what it's all about.
Wow. Well, thank you for your time, your talent, your impact, everything you guys are doing. Let's give it up for Tap Waters. Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. So tomorrow we'll be talking to Erica, who's the head of music and partnerships at community.com. Spoiler alert, community.com is literally how you build a sustainable music career forever, in my opinion, after you've gotten your art together, of course. Huge thanks to podcast manager Mike Zimmerlich, engineer Nathan Kane, upcoming episode 5 guest Matthew Wong for composing the show's perfect music, Tower Records and Tower Labs, today's incredible guests, Namel, Tapwaters Norris, Downtown, Ramped, the Ally Coalition, and of course, the Mayor's Office of Media and Entertainment's New York Music Month for making this all happen. Thanks so much for coming out to the season 3 premiere of How to Build a Sustainable Music Career and Collect All Revenue Streams, and we'll see you tomorrow.